The Gross Profit Podcast is your one-stop shop on the path to profitability. Each week, we share authentic advice on the positive, practical steps you can take to make the company you love more profitable. If you're looking for a positive plan to help you avoid common spending mistakes, control costs, and increase your profits, then this is the place for you. I'm Ryan Cowden, and this week we're joined by James Kennedy and Garrett Carraher. In this episode of the Gross Profit Podcast, James and Garrett discuss some of the ground rules that will help you wisely and safely negotiate new contractual agreements with your clients. The finality of signing a contract should rightly inspire caution in the signing parties. Once your name is on the dotted line, there can be little recourse. You have to abide by the terms of the deal, all of them, even those included in the fine print. Words that you didn't see or implications that were not apparent at the time of the signing become attached to your name and reputation. Today, our conversation will shed some much-needed light on the confusing process of negotiating a contract. If you follow some simple ground rules and learn from our past mistakes, you will be well on your way to creating safe agreements that you are prepared to fulfill and abide by. On this episode, you'll hear the basic tenets of a contract. Every contract needs to include mutual consent, an offer and acceptance of common terms, and an exchange of value. Next, Garrett will tell a story of a bad contract he experienced and the lessons he learned along the way. By sharing a past story of a bad contract his company found itself in, Garrett relays some of the biggest lessons he's learned about what to look for in a contract and why they are so important. Finally, we'll offer a couple more practical tips for protecting yourself from bad contracts. By setting up ways to manage expiring contracts and issuing your own purchase orders, you can set yourself up to be even more secure if you need to protect yourself from bad situations. If you're looking for some practical steps to protect yourself in contract negotiations, then this is one episode you won't want to miss. There's a lot of actionable advice in this episode, so grab something to write with because you're going to want to take notes. As always, I'll be back on the other side to wrap up any loose ends. So without any further ado, here's our conversation with James and Garrett.
Hello and welcome to the Gross Profit Podcast. It's James Kennedy, CEO of ProcurementExpress.com. We help hundreds of companies spend billions of dollars each year safely. I'm joined by the secret CFO in his ivory tower, Garrett Carraher. Garrett, how are you today?
Super, James. How are you getting on? It's all good today.
Why are you secret? It's secret because you're worried that you might get kicked out from your job if they found out you were doing a podcast about being an expert on what you're doing.
Yeah, it's like the stig of accountancy. You know what I mean? You know, the super fast driver. You don't want people to know your secret identity, you know?
That is just so exciting. If you don't know what the stig is, it's Top Gear, wasn't it? Top Gear was they would have a secret driver who would do crazy things in a car and no one knew who he was. I thought he was a girl. Wasn't he a girl once?
I'm not sure. He seemed a bit tall for a girl, but maybe. Could have been. Girls are very good drivers, so he could easily have been a girl or a bloke. It could be anybody or from any gender or any race anywhere. But
Absolutely. I can tell you've got
covered off everyone there.
You've obviously been on that HR course, Garrett.
Thanks, James. It really helped me. It really got rid of all my bad attributes. Thanks so much.
Okay, so let's get into contract management, the good, bad, and ugly. We've got a nice juicy story from Garrett on how things can go wrong when it comes to contracts. But let's jump in with some of the basics. I've got a definition of what you need at the very least to be contract. I got this from legalmatch.com. So if it's wrong, you can blame them. I've seen an extended list of this in different jurisdictions. But at the very least, there are three things you need to constitute a contract in all the jurisdictions, which is the first thing is a contract must be by mutual consent. It's not like you can conscript someone into a contract. They have to be used their free will to come into it. And there must be a record of that mutual consent between two or more parties. There must be an offer and an acceptance. So in other words, this normally takes the form of money in return for a service and acceptance of those terms as set out. And finally, you have this legalese term, which is consideration, which is a term for basically there must be some exchange of value. In other words, it can't be outrageously unfair contract in terms of what's been offered and received. And there must be benefit for both parties. So if you have that, and there are a lot of so-called contracts out there or agreements which happen informally, you know, contracts don't need to be written down. They can be written. They can be oral. They can be in an email. They can be in a 100-page document. Doesn't really matter what form they come in, but they must contain those items. And oftentimes, actually, you'll have your team entering into contracts, whether they realize it or not, all of the time, over the phone, by email, even if it's inadvertent. So it's worth making sure that everyone is aware of what makes up a contract. So, Gareth, we're going to talk about good contracts, which I've just talked about a little bit now, but you have a story around a bad contract and what can go wrong.
Yeah, so I was working for a business, a large business here in Ireland, and a lot of the business, it was a multinational, a lot of the business we got was actually from the other parts of the European parts of the business. So that might be from the UK, it might have been from Germany, Switzerland, wherever. And they would sign up to a contract to cover a particular customer for the whole of Europe. So these are large customers. What would happen then is sometimes we could find out that we had been signed up to a contract to support and supply a supplier here in Ireland, and we didn't know anything about it. So it sounds incredible, but it is in fact true. So one of the ones we got signed up for was a large business that actually started in Ireland, but it was based in Ireland and the UK. It was a large business in what they did was, and they still do, is they allow people to gamble on different things. So there's a large business in Ireland, the UK, and they're gambling shops, basically. So we got the support contract for that. So the support contract meant, what were we supposed to do? Well, we were supposed to go in, you know, clean up each of their premises, make sure all the electronics were working, lek and mek, it's called electronics and mechanical. So that might be shutter doors or lights or switches and different things like that. And that was also get rid of the waste. So they'd be putting out bins every night, I think it was. I'm not sure if they had much waste disposal, but it could be every second night or every night they'd put out bins. So the UK had actually signed us up for this contract in the UK and Ireland. But because it had initially started as an Irish company, we actually had more of their premises here in Ireland. So the story was then that they hadn't involved the Irish part of the business really in this at all. So what we found out as the contract started was the location of the premises in the UK was more dense than in Ireland. So in Ireland, even though they had more shops, they were spread over bigger distances. Whereas in the UK, they had roughly the same amount of shops, but they were more condensed. So they might have 3 shops in the one town or city, whereas Ireland is more of a rural country, as you know, and it's more dispersed. So it turned out then that there was a huge amount of cost in going to all these different premises in Ireland compared to the UK. The second issue we had was we were supposed to do the waste disposal for the business. Now, when they initially costed it, they had got a particular, they're going to subcontract it out, and they got a particular subcontractor here in Ireland to do it, something like Thornton's Waste Disposal or someone like that. And they had offered it at a particular price to Thornton's, maybe 400,000 a year to do the waste disposal on all these premises. But actually, what happened was Thornton's looked at that proposal, and they were able to work out that due to the location of the premises around Ireland, they're actually going to lose money on it. They're actually going to lose money on this, believe it or not. So they elected not to do it. So suddenly we're left then with a huge cost on the waste disposal and no one to do it. And we have to provide the service. So what happened was we had to go then to a different waste disposal and pay them significantly more money to get it done. And in fact, by paying them the additional money, we actually put the whole contract into a loss-making situation. Now, some people might be saying, well, why don't you just not pick up the waste or, you know, not deliver? But in a lot of contracts, you need to look at the fine print. And in this particular contract, there was an underperformance clause, which meant if we did not deliver on particular aspects of the contract, one of them was waste disposal every day, then we would be hit with significant financial penalties. But believe it or not, it was getting to the stage where it was nearly cheaper to be hit with the financial penalties and just not provide the service rather than provide the service at a loss. As you can imagine, James, this contract didn't go too well for us. And what happened in the end was We had numerous meetings. We tried to meet up with the customer and negotiate more money. They wouldn't pay. We went back to the UK and said, you've signed us up for a loss-making contract. They just said that was our problem. It's not very helpful, even though we're part of a larger group, but that's the way things can go. So at the end of the day, what happened was we actually lost that contract after the first year. And in fact, we were happy to lose it because we'd actually lost a lot of money on it. So it just shows you when you sign up for a contract, you need to understand the fine print. Because what can happen very often, and what happened in this case, is sales can sign you up for something that ops can't deliver and which hasn't been reviewed by finance.
No, I'm sure that hardly ever happens.
So this is a key thing. Are all the stakeholders involved? Has everyone signed off on it? And that's actually a new process that was brought in. So even though sales will say, we will take away your waste on gold-covered wheelie bins and empty it out, and everything will be done to the highest standard, and we'll polish the bins afterwards and all this, that needs to go through ops for them to understand, can they actually do that? And then it needs to go to finance to understand, can we do it at the right price? And that would be my top tips for anyone who's thinking about signing up for a contract. Understand those three things and you can't go wrong.
Great. Thanks for that, Gareth. I mean, there's some practical steps we shouldn't finish off on, I guess, for every day, because that's a big story with a big impact. But actually, a lot of these mistakes happen on the day-to-day down in the trenches. If you're not using, don't have a repository for managing your contracts and when they're expiring, I would totally recommend that you start doing that straight away. It's one of the easiest ways to default into contracts. A lot of contracts these days are in subscription form. If you don't catch them on the right time, you will be locked into that contract for a further year, whether you like it or not. And I see that fairly regularly for people who are using other pieces of software, and they find that they actually can't move away from the software because they've been defaulted into another year. So having some alert system for expiring contracts is the very minimum I consider most people to have. Second thing you can do is, which is a great feature with procurementexpress.com, which is that if you're sending out purchase orders to customers or to suppliers rather, you will then be setting the terms for the agreement. So many times you will get a quotation from a supplier. If you agree to those terms, you just sort of go ahead and agree, you will be agreeing to all the fine print that they have within the quotation. And let's face it, a lot of times these quotations can have a lot of fine print. But an easy way to avoid that and to enter into agreements with your suppliers without having to read dozens of different terms and conditions is to use a purchase order and attach your own terms and conditions. And then if it ever does come down to a legal tussle due to a precedent known as the Battle of the Forms, you will be discussing the disagreement, if you like, on the basis of your terms and conditions in your purchase order instead of theirs, because your purchase order terms and conditions will take precedence over the quotation terms and conditions. So that's two tips I have for anyone out there listening to this. I want to guard against the risk of ending up in a bad contract, as my poor old friend Gareth did.
Thanks, James. I'll note them down for future reference and make sure we keep a close eye on them from now on.
All right. Thanks, Gareth. This was a lot of fun. As usual, you're a star. See you next time.
Thanks, James. Good to talk to you. Talk to you next time.
All right, folks, there you have it. And that wraps up our conversation with James Kennedy and Gareth Carraher. They shared a ton of valuable insights and advice today about the basic rules you need to understand about contracts. We also shared some tools and resources, which will all be linked up in the show notes. Don't forget to click on one of those links to get a free chapter from the book Profit Leaks by James Kennedy and Gareth Carraher. I hope you enjoyed our conversation. Please consider subscribing, sharing with a friend, or leaving us a review in your favorite podcast directory. Until next time, best of luck in all that you do, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Gross Profit Podcast.